If you're a small business owner, you already know what it takes to keep everything moving. You're juggling customers, invoices, and about 100 decisions every day. Thankfully, taxes don't have to be one more thing on that list. With Intuit TurboTax, you can get your business taxes done for you with a full-service expert. TurboTax matches you with your dedicated tax expert who knows your industry, understands your business write-offs, and gives you the personalized advice your business deserves. Upload your documents right in the app, hand everything off, and still feel like you're in the loop the whole way through. You can even get real-time updates on your expert's progress right in the app, which makes it so much easier to stay on track. And you can get unlimited expert help at no extra cost, even on nights and weekends during tax season. Visit TurboTax.com to get matched with an expert today. Only available with TurboTax Full Service Experts.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writing excuses. Season 21, Episode 6. This is Writing Excuses.
Begin at the beginning.
Tools, not rules.
For writers, by writers. I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Aaron.
And this week, we're going to talk about beginnings. This is one of my very favorite topics. I feel like I've said that like 3 episodes in a row. But I do love talking about beginnings. I over-index on them. You know, I think in part it's because of my job as an agent. When I'm looking at queries and I'm looking at samples, I'm always looking at beginnings of stories and trying to make a judgment call on them. So I have read thousands upon thousands of beginnings of books and had to make judgment calls about, is this working or not, right? And, you know, I think they're really, really important. I think readers are also reading beginnings of stories and making a decision of, do I buy this book? Do I keep reading this book, right? And so many times that's where you lose somebody, mm-hmm. right? Because, and sometimes for good reasons, which is, oh, this book isn't for me. I'm not the reader for this. I thought this was going to be something else and it's not. The cover, you know, I assume made an assumption from the cover that isn't true, right? But a lot of times it's people who would enjoy the rest of your book, but bounced off of it because it didn't quite do what the beginning needs to be doing. It's a very difficult section because your reader is coming in cold. They know nothing about what's happening. They don't know your characters, your stakes, your world, and you need to communicate an enormous amount of information to them very quickly without losing them because of a lack of action or too complex prose or whatever it is.
So this episode is kind of going to give you an overview, and then we're going to have some follow-up episodes where we're going to kind of drill into a lot of these things. But generally, when I'm thinking about beginnings, I think about grounding the reader. Mm-hmm. I think about setting their expectations for the kind of ride that they're going to be on. I think about the pace of the and tone of the overall thing. So sometimes I'm going to do something that's called an action-driven opening, and sometimes I'm going to do something that's called a voice-driven opening. And I think about sort of what questions I want to set up that are going to, like, how am I going to pull the reader through the story? Sometimes we call this a hook. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we call this a frame. There's a bunch of different words for it. But, like, what is it that makes the reader say, oh, I care about this?
I recently did an event in which we read the beginnings of people's works. Mm-hmm. And so what happened is there was a panel and we read the first few pages. I was one of the readers. We actually couldn't see the panel. And when 3 of them raised their hands saying, I would stop reading here, we stopped. And so it was really an interesting way, like, and we read them completely, like, no prep at all. Yeah. And it was an interesting way to see what was catching people's attentions. And to me, it was like something that felt unique, something that people hadn't necessarily heard of before, with interesting details. I found that pieces that had really interesting details, especially if it was like one key detail that felt unique and felt like something that you could really understand, grabbed people's interest and kept them going through the whole beginning, whereas other ones did not have that same sort of grab.
I've been the reader for this kind of event. And I've also learned that there's a way you can set up this experience at home with friends, which is you can create kind of a slush pile experience We do something with my short story cohort where we do we take the first 13 lines, which is the first page in standard manuscript format, and we chunk all of the first 13 lines that we have written in a period of time into a single document, and then we go through and read it as if we're reading through a slush pile, mm-hmm. and mark which ones catch us and why. We don't mark which ones we hate. We don't do any of that. It's just I love this, I love that. And one of the things that will happen for the writer is that often everyone will gravitate towards one, and the writer is like, that's really fascinating because I know that this other one that no one has picked is way more interesting deeper into the story. Yeah. And so then they can look at it and compare, like, what am I doing in this one that everyone is gravitating towards? And so that's something that you can do with your mm-hmm. writing friends. You can create your own slush pile. You can even create a slush pile by just grabbing the first 13 lines out of existing material that's not even yours mm-hmm. to create this experience of, like, what is it that consistently catches me? And it's you'll find that it is different with each of them, but that a lot of it is that there is something in it that makes you, and this is so amorphous, but there's something in it that makes you lean in.
Yeah. I think that thing is control. The thing I think about the most when I'm looking at the opening pages of a book is the author in control of this story? Are they in control of their prose? And I think about this in terms of, we've returned to this metaphor a few times this season, but Amal El-Montar's idea of a book as an act of hospitality, right? And I think of that in terms of when you walk into someone's house, you can feel if this was a space designed with intention, if it's clean and orderly and set up for a good experience for you, right? When you walk into someone's house and it's chaotic, there's stuff all over the place, there's no clear place for you to sit, there's no, you know, if you don't know how to get water or you don't know how to be comfortable here, it puts you in a more, it puts you on your back foot, right? And so when you walk into a story, you want to feel that this is a roller coaster ride and that roller coaster is well built and I'm not going to fall off of it, right? And so I think finding ways to communicate that in the opening pages of you're in good hands, I got you, is incredibly important. And I think a lot of people think it's important to start with action. You have to start in media res. It has to be thrilling and exciting. But sometimes for me, the strongest openings are ones that are very, very quiet. The ones that are just describing something for a long time, but they're doing it in a way that is demonstrating in micro, you're going to like my prose. I have control over the pacing. I'm going to build tension and you're going to be interested in even though nothing is happening yet.
Yeah, it is kind of like going into a house like for a party. Like yeah. You can come in the middle of a party and it definitely things will be going on. It'll be interesting. But if you don't know anyone there, you can sometimes feel like very like, I don't understand. I just want to stand on the corner of the wall. I don't know why this person is dancing with that person or what's happening. But if you come to a house before the party has begun, you get a chance to like take in like, oh, this is the place. Here's the person. Here's the host. Now I have like a little bit of a sense of it. And I think that's why details to me like stuck out as one of the things that worked really well in the openings that I was reading, because like in a house, if you have too many knickknacks, like it's just like it's hard to focus. Same way if you have like too many details, if you're trying to describe a scene and it's like this amazing detail, that amazing detail, it's like, wow, I can't focus. But if you're controlled and you're like, let me take your eye to this one really important thing that like resonates with the story and is really going to catch your attention, like having that one really great art wall in your house, that is something that says, I understand how to move you through this mm-hmm. space, move you through this story, and give you something that's going to be worth seeing, worth reading.
Because even you show up in the middle of the party, if there's a clear idea, oh, snacks are here, drink station is here, music is there, and that's clearly legible, or the host comes over and says, hey, let me take you around, then you can have a great time in the middle of the party. You can show up in media res if you're being well taken care of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the same token, if you arrive too early, there's that incredibly awkward thing where you stand around while the host is getting things ready. That's when those are the books that you read where they've just started it too soon.
Yeah.
It's like they are still doing the throat clearing, which often you need to do while you are writing. And there's nothing wrong with doing that in draft. Mm-hmm. Like, do not think that your first draft has to have the perfect opening line the first time around. Very few of mine do, I have to tell you that.
It's funny, I almost suggested changing the title of the episode, but my proposal would have made no sense, which is the beginning is a terrible place to start. Because sometimes I run this, this is a very, very common mistake, is that the writer is starting the story for where the character's story starts, which is like waking up, going to school, you know, before the inciting incident has happened. And so a lot of times what I'll say is, hey, jump forward, start where something interesting is happening. Don't start at the beginning, start at the interesting. But the challenge of that is exactly what we're talking about of you don't have any context and it's all pretty chaotic. And I think there's like a lot of techniques to help ease the reader in. Like we've talked about high level of like how you want the reader to feel. And in the when we come back from the break, I want to start talking about some of the techniques that we use to make sure that that feels good to them.
If you've been stuck on a 6-month wait list for a psychiatrist or are bouncing between online mental health sites trying to find medication support, Talkiatry was built for you. It's virtual psychiatry that actually fits your life and your insurance. It's a 100% online psychiatry practice that provides comprehensive evaluations, diagnoses, and ongoing medication management for conditions like ADHD, anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, and more. Unlike therapy-only apps, Talkiatry is psychiatry. That means you're seeing a medical provider who can diagnose mental health conditions and prescribe medication when it's appropriate. All their 600-plus clinicians are in-network with major insurers, so you can use your existing insurance instead of paying monthly subscriptions or out-of-network fees. You'll meet with an experienced, licensed psychiatrist who takes the time to understand what's going on, builds a personalized treatment plan, and can prescribe medication when it's right for you. Your care stays consistent and evidence-based. Getting started with Talkiatry takes just a few minutes. Complete a short online assessment, get matched with clinicians who fit your needs, and schedule your first visit in days, not months. More than 300,000 patients have already found high-quality psychiatric care through Talkiatry. Head to talkiatry.com/WX and complete the short assessment to get matched with an in-network psychiatrist in just a few minutes. That's talkiatry.com/WX to get matched in minutes.
Where I live, the new year brings colder days. Regardless of my New Year's resolutions, my wardrobe should resolve to keep me cozy. And thanks to Quince, it's doing just that. A couple of months back, I picked up a plush cotton crew neck sweater for $50, and it is still my favorite. I have other sweaters, but this is the one I reach for. Quince can bundle you up in more than just sweaters. They've got down jackets, wool coats, Italian leather outerwear that's warm on the inside, even when it's really cold outside. Each piece is made from premium materials by trusted manufacturers that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. By partnering directly with these folks, Quince provides top-quality clothing at a fraction of the price of luxury brands. Refresh your winter wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/WX for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/WX. Free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/WX.
It's the start of a new year, and that's a time where lots of us, I certainly do, step back and consider the systems we use and if there's a way to make things smoother, more efficient, or just easier. And if you're running a small business, a simple solution for payroll, benefits, and HR, like Gusto, lets you start your year off on the right foot. Gusto is online payroll and benefit software built for small businesses. It's all-in-one, remote-friendly, and incredibly easy to use. So you can pay, hire, onboard, and support your team from anywhere. Automatic payroll tax filing, simple direct deposits, health benefits, commuter benefits, workers' comp, 401k. You name it, Gusto makes it simple and has options for nearly every budget. It's quick and simple to switch. Just transfer your existing data to get up and running fast. Plus, don't pay a cent until you run your first payroll. Try Gusto today at gusto.com/WX and get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. That's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/WX. One more time, gusto.com/WX.
Okay, welcome back. You know, in the first half of this, we've been talking about how do you make a reader feel comfortable in the story? How do you communicate authority and control as they're reading the opening lines of your work? Let's start talking about the techniques that are useful here. How do you play with getting enough information into those opening pages that they accomplish all the goals that you set out, Mary Robinette, and the reader feels well grounded in the story and has a sense of the shape of what's to come?
Yeah, and we will get into this like a lot more when we get to the grounding the reader episode, but high level, I think about that the reader wants to know kind of where they are and where can include a win. Mm-hmm. They want to know what they're supposed to care about, whether that's a person or an idea, and they want to know, you know, sort of what is happening. Which can sometimes in an action-driven story being like literally what is the character doing, but mm-hmm. in a voice-driven opening that can, like Hitchhiker's Guide is an example of this. They want to know, you know, like what is the deal with the watches and the, you know, the digital watches and why they're a pretty neat idea. Going back to the, I jotted something down while Aaron was talking before the break about arriving at a party and how you know that someone is in control. Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, yeah, I want a sense of control, that the author is in control, but like, what is that? Mm-hmm. And I think the things that we're looking at are intention, the order, you know, that it isn't just a chaotic thing. Sometimes, like, if you have everything everywhere all at once, mm-hmm. but that doesn't start chaotically. Chaos comes in that. Taste, a sense of the author's taste, and then a good host comes with an offering.
Yeah.
And so I think if you kind of think about those things, it's like, what is your intention with this opening? What order are you going to present the information in so that they build a picture in their head? What is the tone, the taste that you're trying to demonstrate? And what is the thing that you're offering that entices them to come farther in? Mm-hmm.
The thing I think about a lot is a really useful thing to do is to create a microcosm of the greater story.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. You do a tiny little micro taster of, you know, the Douglas Adams things you're talking about. Mm-hmm. In terms of that opening, the reason it works is it's him being like, hey, you like this? Get ready for a lot more of mm-hmm. it, right? And sometimes just giving a little taste sample of what's going to come is the most useful thing you can do. My favorite opening of all time is... The Haunting of Hill House. Mm. And it starts with this like abstract idea, goes into a long description of a house, just very normal description of a house, and then ends on an incredibly creepy line, right? And so what that is an absolute outline of the book we're about to read, of kind of abstract, gets into talking about a house for a long time, and then gets real weird, right? And so I think sometimes setting the reader up and putting them through the paces of your story in a, you know, filtered way, in a microcosm way, is a great way to be like, do you like this? You're going to like this book.
I also think, like, I agree with that. I also think, like, making a promise and then keeping it really quickly mm-hmm. is a great way to show that you understand what's going on, or asking a question and answering
yes.
it. Yeah. Because, like, early on, the reader's like, I don't know if I can trust you to keep your promises or answer the questions. And as the story goes on, you can actually space out, you know, a promise from it being fulfilled or a question from it being answered, because you've already established that you're doing that. It's like you're showing that, like, I said this is what it was going to be, and this is what it's going to be.
I have a friend who calls that welcome snacks. Like when somebody comes to a party, they're immediately like, here's a little thing. Here's just a bite you can have, right? Here's like a little, like, I don't know, like a sweet popcorn dish, or like, you know, a chip and a dip. You know what I mean? Just like immediately on walking, you just get a little mouthful of something. You're like, that was nice. Okay, let's go, you know?
And part of what that does in a party setting, we're also party planners here, is that it says, I thought of you. Mm-hmm. When someone has a snack for you, when you enter, they say, like, I actually, before you arrived, thought of something that would make you more comfortable and happy in this moment. I made a promise. I'm going to be your host. And I have immediately fulfilled it by doing something that I wouldn't do if this wasn't a party.
Yeah.
And so that is the quick thing that you can put in the story.
Which reminds me of a thing. I was talking with a friend who had just gone over to someone's home, and it was the first time this person had hosted anyone. And the friend arrives, and she's there for an awkward amount of time. And then the person is like, oh, I probably should have had snacks. I should have the snacks. Do we have snacks? I might have snacks. And that is often my experience of reading early career manuscripts, where you arrive and there's like nothing really happening. And then at some point, the author is like, oh, something's supposed to happen. And then there's like an explosion out of nowhere and you don't understand why it's happening or anything. You're like, what is going on? And you feel a little unsafe and uncomfortable.
And one thing I want to point out is I think you can be forgiving of your friend when it's your friend.
Yes.
And that happens. Mm. When you go over to your buddy's house, you're like, oh man, you know, Chuck is always like this. You know what I mean? Doesn't know how to plan a party. But when you are asking someone to pay $20 and give up time away from their family, away from TV and video games and going to the gym or whatever it is, then that is saying, come to my professional event.
You don't want the Fire Festival of Books.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
Exactly. You don't want to be serving someone, you know, white bread with a slice of ham on it and being like, welcome to my luxury festival, right? You need to be giving them...
Sorry.
Aaron is just losing it over there. But you don't want it to be Fire Festival. You don't want it to be the White Lotus, right? You want to be like, here's the beautiful experience. Also, someone's going to murdered. But, you know, I think thinking about, I mean, we really went all in on this hospitality metaphor, but I think it's really, really, really useful when thinking about openings of how do you take care of readers as they're coming into your story.
Yeah. And the other thing that I will say about this is that from a writing perspective, from a craft perspective, you 100% don't need to get this right on the first try, and almost certainly won't. Every now and then you'll get lucky. Like, I have had times where I'm lucky and the opening is lasts through the whole thing. More often than not, I will get into the middle of the book and then reach the end of the book and realize, this is what that book is actually about, and have to go back and write a new first chapter. Or with a short story, have to reframe the first couple of pages. Sometimes it's just a paragraph. Sometimes I have to throw a whole scene at the beginning of it. Mm-hmm. But it changes. In fact, coming up in in two episodes from now, we're going to be looking at one of my stories with her serpent locks. And that opening line is not the opening line that I started with. It's an opening line that did not happen until my editor read it and said, we need this here. And I was like, and I resisted it. It was really, very annoyed, but very correct. Very, very correct. So when you're writing from a craft perspective, think about this as party planning with time travel.
Yeah.
You get to plan the party and then you get to have the party and then you get to time travel back and say, okay, these are the snacks we actually need. These are the things that this is who's coming. It turns out this allergy exists and we need to take that snack away and make sure that the AC is running because someone is coming with a fire thing that they're going to do outside and then everyone's going to come back inside and be really hot. So like you can do all of that and then throw the party again.
Yeah.
And everyone is comfortable. It's the same people coming, but they just have a different experience because of the way you frame it at the beginning.
And I think you can also learn that you wrote a beginning to the story that you're not actually trying to write.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you could be like, I'm going to, like, in the party planning analogy, you're like, I'm going to throw a rager, the rager to end all ragers with a string quartet and wine and cheese. And it's like, is that a rager? Like, if what you want in your party is like, I actually want people to have really quiet, intimate conversations with each other the entire party. Like, even though in your head you may want to think, I'm the kind of person who throws the epic frat rager. No, you're actually interested in this like gentle like cocktail party. And that's okay. Because I think sometimes we get ideas in our head of what we want to be as writers. And we start writing a beginning using that. And then in the middle, we realize this is not the story that I really want to tell. And it's okay to abandon that and leave that beginning for some other time or some other version of you.
And with that idea, it's also important to note that sometimes We get ideas from seeing other people's parties,
yeah.
but those parties don't necessarily fit into our house, mm-hmm. into our taste, or into our budget. Like when I see people go from novels to short stories, they are trying to write an opening with a novel budget, which is mm-hmm. a lot more words, and they just don't have that big of a budget, and their apartment is also a studio apartment. It's not a mansion, so you have to yeah. make different choices.
And, you know, I think another reason to not write your beginning first or not worry about your beginning being exactly right when you start is that openings of novels are heightened, right? They're written in a slightly different way than the rest of the book because your language is going to be a little bit more dense. You're going to be doing more than you can ease out of this like really high octane, high information density. And like often in your opening lines, you're going to be a little more showy than you will be later in the book in terms of prose style. Because you're trying to like really hit people with like, here's a banger opening line. Here's like, I can write, you know what I mean? Is one thing you're trying to communicate in that early section. And so trying to sustain that over the course of the novel would be a huge mistake because it would be exhausting for your reader and for you. So I think finding a way to like have to come back and be like, okay, how do I craft something that feels heightened and feels like a special entry to the story, but doesn't have to be sustained throughout. And that kind of gives you the space to do that little microcosm thing that we were talking about.
And I think that's going to bring us to our homework. And for the homework, what I'd like to ask you to do is to make an artificial slush pile. This is a great exercise that you can do. We're going to be talking about tools and we're going to give you an opportunity through the rest of this beginning to play with those tools in the homework. But for right now, just take a look, just analyze existing tools and see what works for you and what makes you lean in, what makes you feel welcome at the party. This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write. Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. Your hosts for this episode were Mary Robinette Kowal, Don Juan Song, and Aaron Roberts. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.